Honorable Chairperson, he's not yet in, but he is certainly planned to join. Because he was just in a meeting this morning, which started earlier, but he is he has committed that he will join us. Because as you, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, you know, we've got two, there is also a portfolio committee currently sitting parallel to this one. And then the minister and DM, they decided to split themselves. So the DM won't be here. He's in the portfolio committee, leading the team there. And then minister is committed to lead the team here. I can just check his whereabouts now, Honorable Chairperson.
No, it's okay. Nultan, do you fly the agenda? Thank you. As you can see, this meeting is supposed to end at 12:30, but we'll have to push faster so that we finish the meeting before that time. And obviously, because of this time constraint, they may not be deeper engagement with the presentation because of the time constraint. And that later, I mean, after this meeting, the questions will be sent to the department. Some of the questions will be sent to the department for written responses. DG, because of this time constraint, I think I should give you an opportunity to open the meeting and make the presentation. The minister will do his opening remarks when he joins us. Time is not on our side. The UNESCO declared the year 2022 to 2032 as a decade of indigenous languages. And on the program here, we do have a briefing on the promotion of indigenous languages, that is including Khoi, Sen, Nama, and other languages. We would like to get, you know, how far are we with this? Are we part of, are we respond, how is our response to the UNESCO call for this decade? As the decade of indigenous languages. It will be very interesting to know which languages are included and which ones are not. But we'll leave that to the presenters. Over to you, DG.
Now, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members. I am Hussein Kize. The DG, I would like to just introduce the team of the department that is here, Honorable Chairperson. I have the Deputy Director General, Dr. Cynthia Kumalo, who is responsible for Program 3, which is ACPD. And then I've got DDG, and the Chief Director under her a branch, which is Lisa Kombrink. And then I've got Lodwick, who is in my office. And then we've got Nobonga also, Ramalepe, who is in my office. And then we've got DG, Vusitemba Ndima, who is also then responsible for heritage promotion and preservation. And then we've got Sivuile Watshani in the office of the Deputy Minister. And they're also accompanied by Mrs. Zanele Ndima, who is also in a branch of ACPD. Honorable Chairperson, the presentation that we were asked to have, we have a number of them. It's five presentations, and in the order of the way they were written, would be just guided by the Honorable Chairperson, but the order is indicating that it's Presidential Employment Stimulus Package Program, and then followed by Indigenous Languages, and then it's music and art forms for the promotion thereof, and then it's functionality of community libraries and the installation of the South African flags in schools. I would like to assume, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that it is in this order that we shall present as guided by the program that was sent to us. But before that, Chairperson, I would like to really submit our humble gratitude that you were able to grant us the postponement at a very short notice due to the circumstances that particularly myself I was in, as well as the situation that could not allow us to give the committee the best professional presentation possible. And we thank you for your consideration.
Recording in progress.
We will then proceed. Honorable Chairperson, on the presentation of the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package, we just want to indicate, noting your time constraint, that this is a product of a serious, difficult times that the country faced of COVID-19, and therefore then the jobs were being away, the country was bleeding jobs. This sector was not left unscathed, and therefore then the president, in his wisdom with his cabinet, decided that we should be able to have some soft lending that can assist to still create jobs and not continue to allow South Africans to suffer. So this is the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package where then this sector benefited. And we would like to also indicate that it is in line now with the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan that the department has, the government has embarked upon. And we were fortunate again that we were reallocated another key slice to make sure that this sector is able to come up with its feet, recover, and grow. And we will then also check a thing. This is linked to our Cultural Creative Industries Master Plan, which has recently been approved by Cabinet. And therefore, then this will help us then to have a better trajectory towards economic recovery. I will ask Chairperson that the Deputy Director General responsible for pioneering this project in the department, Dr. Cynthia Khumalo, takes us through. Over to you, Dr. Khumalo.
Thank you very much, DG, and good morning, Chairperson. I'm just trying to show my face. I hope it shows. And with your permission, I'll then switch it off so that I have got better quality. And also, good morning to the members. As indicated by the Director General, Chairperson, I would then take the members through our Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. We just wanted to give the committee first an indication of what had been implemented already before we talk to the program as it is being implemented this financial year in terms of what we refer to as phase three of the PESP. I will be abbreviating it and referring it to PESP, Chairperson, which is an acronym for Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. As indicated by DG, it sits within our Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan, one of the key critical areas identified in the department's plan is job creation. So this particular program, Chairperson, has indicated in the slide that is reflected, which I will summarize, is talking to phase one and phase two of PESP, which the department, through the allocation that was given by National Treasury, was able to implement. A total of 9 projects over the financial year 2020-21 and 2021-22 were implemented. At the time of reporting, Chairperson, we were also giving indication that we, out of those 9 projects, one of them, which is being implemented through the National Library of South Africa, has been rolled over into this new financial year, and we were giving indication that it would then be finalized in September, which is the next month, 2022, and has involved an appointment and a recall of interns who continue with the work and also as part of job creation. You will see, Chairperson, when I go to the next slide, the numbers that give indication of the number of jobs that were created for each of these nine projects. What we want to emphasize in this slide is that during the implementation of this program, there was an element of skills transfer that was incorporated in almost all the implemented projects. Particular mention is that of the one implemented by SARA and also the one implemented by SACO. The detail, as I said, will be in the next slide. Perhaps if I move there, because I'm just going to summarize to also save on time, Chairperson, if I move to this slide. We also needed to indicate to the committee that there were, however, some recent challenges that ensued during the implementation process. For instance, we would have some of the participants dropping out of the program due to other opportunities that they have managed to harness. And then you'll find that some of these participants did not complete the task, especially the training schedules. We also had to deal with a number of legal matters due to the revised guiding figure that is particularly with reference to what transpired in the National Arts Council. And then also the beneficiaries requested for a longer time, particularly under the section that was implemented by the National Film and Video Foundation on film production. Hence the process of implementation having to overlap onto the next financial year, which was the 21-2022. A high number of non-compliant applicants in terms of the documentation that was required for us to be able to process their applications, and the unavailability of film and IT digitization equipment in the country, which as a result then delayed the project that was implemented by our National Archives, working with the National Library Services. As indicated, Chairperson, this slide then summarizes for the members, and I do apologize for the size of the font, if at all it might not be visible very well on the screen. But I will just focus on the bottom of the slide where the total is reflected, Chairperson, which indicates the total amount of funding that the department received for both phase one and phase two of the Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. And it also gives the indication of the spend and the number of jobs that according to National Treasury, we needed to create, which was 33,746. And we are giving indication to person that the total number of jobs that we were able to create through especially the employment multiplier model, which we use within this sector, stood at 38,557 beneficiaries. We also have given indication, Chairperson, that all the projects were completed except for the one that I gave indication for where there was a rollover, but it didn't really necessarily affect the objective of the project. Next slide, please. Now, moving on to what is currently happening, Chairperson, as DG indicated, we have been allocated a new funding for this financial year totaling 440 million, and then also for the next financial year, 460 million, which will enable the department to implement different initiatives for employment creation for the artists, the creatives, but also the cultural and heritage practitioners within the industry. The output will focus on the number of opportunities to jobs created in the cultural and creative industry through targeted call. This will be a continuation of the work that was done by the NAC, NSDF, and other entities as well. The cultural and creative industry will also create more downstream jobs apart from the targeted jobs beyond the indicator. As I said, we are utilizing the employment multiplier model, as it were. The support will also upscale the new normal of the online streaming of the cultural and the creative industry project, which were lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic that the country experienced. The agencies that are implementing this financial year is the National Arts Council, National Film and Video Foundation, the National Heritage Council, the National Museum, which is also referred to as the Art Bank in terms of the project that they are implementing, and the Business and Arts South Africa, which is BASA. From the lessons learned in the implementation of the previous phases, which is phase one and phase two, this time around, the department has set up a project management unit that will play oversight, monitor, evaluate, compile reports, and ensure that PESP is being implemented in keeping with the allocation and the business plans and concept documents submitted by this. So we have got that unit that we have set up within the department, which also helped contribute to job creation, Chairperson, in terms of the three personnel that have been appointed already. One is expected to commence in the next month. The sectors that are going to be covered through this new funding have been indicated on this slide as performance and celebration, which is inclusive of theater, dance, opera, and such, audiovisual and interactive media, visual arts and craft, design and creative services, books and publishing, which is inclusive of the indigenous language development and promotion, cultural and national heritage, and human language technologies. Next slide. Then also, we just give indication, Chairperson, of the framework that we are using in terms of these genres or the disciplines that will be funded through this. We just give detail here in this slide of what I just mentioned in the previous slide in terms of the specific genres and the specific disciplines per each of the six cultural domains. I won't read through this one. Next one, please. The allocation and number of jobs that are to be created total to 440 million for this financial year, as I indicated. And this slide indicates the split across the five entities that are implementing. You will note, Chairperson, that we have also projected the number of jobs that are to be created by each of these interventions, and they are totaling to 24,403. I need to emphasize here, Chairperson, that in the guideline that we have given to the, entities, to the five entities, we also indicated the priority target groups that we are targeting, which are youth, women, and people with disabilities. And as they report in our weekly meetings, monitoring meetings, they are giving us indication of the applications that they are getting that are targeting these particular priority areas. I have indicated already about the PMU. The progress to date, Chairperson, and I'm just going to indicate that at the time of compiling this document, that is where we were, but we are now quite advanced, Chairperson, in terms of how we have progressed with implementation. Here, Chair, we were indicating that all five entities have submitted their concept documents, that the drawing up of MOAs have commenced, but I need to then indicate to the meeting that at this point, all MOAs, four MOAs have been signed off by both the entities and our Director General representing us as the accounting officer in the department. There is only one MOA that has not been finalized, and which we are due to conclude before the end of this month, if not the end of this week. We've already received it from the entity, and we are going to be routing it to. So all MOAs have been signed, and they are in place, and they are accompanied by the concept document that define how they will implement. And again, we are just indicating the focus, but I think I need to emphasize, Chair, that this time around, through the directive received from the Director General, we also are focusing on the development and the support of SMMEs and cooperatives that are in the industry. Hence, the focus for BASA, one of the implementing entities, is on those particular areas which cut across different domains. I've spoken to the issue of the PMU, Chairperson, at the time of our reporting. We were saying that the asbet is out, but I would like to report that we now have the two deputy directors who are forming the project management unit. They have commenced duty as of the beginning of August. I would ask that they join us before the meeting is over, just for introduction. They are the ones that are going to be directly working with the entities to ensure that any of the errors, any of the challenges that informed our understanding of what should happen are addressed going into phase three, and we do not have the repeat of the problems experienced during phase one and phase two. Chairperson, I would at this point like to stop here with our presentation in as far as the implementation and job creation through Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you very much, DGG. Honorable Chairperson, so may I check, should we then take also the next item falls under the same as the Director General? Should we then take the indigenous languages and then be guided by you whether to be questions before we then move to the other three items? Can I get a request for guidance in that regard on whether we present everything or would be a time when there would be then engagement? I've done calculation of time that in fact we've got about, if we were to finish at 11:45, we've got about 15 minutes presentation and maybe 7 minutes for discussions and then for each. But it can be reduced even better if questions come after we've presented everything. But that is how I've tried to break down for my colleagues to know timeline available to them, that they've got just about 10 minutes each to present each item. Can I get guidance, Chairperson?
Thanks a lot for that. Let's welcome the minister. He has joined the meeting now. Welcome, Minister. I think to save time, let's get all the presentations at once and then we'll engage. And then, like I said earlier, with the time constraint, the questions will be forwarded to the department for written replies for those. Welcome, Honorable Minister. Let's take those 10 minutes presentation and then engage and we'll take it from there. You may continue with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Minister. Can I then ask DDG, can we then move to the promotion of indigenous language, African languages, including Khoisan and Nama? The next presentation.
Maybe the minister like to say something before you continue, or he will comment after the presentation. It's up to the minister to decide whether he wants to do it now and or after the presentation.
Well, I would come after presentation, and good morning to you and members of the select committee. Thanks.
Thanks, Minister. You're welcome. Yeah, you may continue, DG, to make the presentation.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, DG.
No, go on, DG. but I'm not seeing the presentation. Can it be shared, please? Loading.
While loading does that, then DG, can I then also indicate that in terms of leading this presentation, the chief director will do that presentation. Lisa, please note that the 10 minutes, please. Over to you. Lisa, I'm not sure whether you lost connection.
We need to share the remaining minutes. It doesn't have to be 10 minutes, because then we'll definitely run out of time before we engage. So make sure that you keep time.
Good morning, DDG. Chairperson, Minister, DG, Honourable Members. I did briefly flash my face. I don't know if you did see it, Chairperson. My presentation is going to be on the promotion of Indigenous African languages, including the Khoi, the San, and the Nama languages. I just wish to say right at the beginning that we've really focused on the work of the department in promoting these languages. So we've focused on the promotion in general, but we will touch on the decade of Indigenous languages in particular, because I note that the chairperson has wanted us to speak in that direction. I don't think the presentation is uploaded yet, but with your permission, I can begin to speak. Thank you. I can see the presentation now.
Yeah.
So I think to begin with, the department recognizes the value and the status of official Indigenous languages as an embodiment of a people's culture, Indigenous knowledge systems, history, values, and beliefs. Based on this fundamental importance, we've realized that Indigenous African languages cannot be separated from their speakers, as they're also a symbol of identity. I think furthermore, the importance of information access, the importance of deepening our democracy, means that our languages need to be something that is part of our daily life and part of our work as government. So after the new dispensation, South Africa had arrived at a crucial point in its linguistic history. We've had to respond to linguistic and cultural diversity, multilingualism, hence the promulgation of the Use of Official Languages Act in 2012, which has resulted in the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture also having a language policy. While this act has brought a fresh approach to multilingualism, it's also encouraged the utilization of Indigenous African languages, including the Khoi and the San and the Nama languages, to foster and promote unity, social cohesion, and Ubuntu. The department is also well aware of the danger of some Indigenous African languages becoming extinct that are now only spoken by a handful of elderly people. We further acknowledge that Indigenous African languages cannot be relegated or seen as languages of informal businesses, but should be considered as a resource, especially within the mainstream economy. We are also, therefore, even embarking upon research through the South African Cultural Observatory in trying to evaluate and measure the size and the contribution of the languages subsector to the creative industries. So the primary objective of the department in relation to languages is to develop and promote all South African official Indigenous languages, including South African sign languages. I've already pointed to some of the legislative instruments, but we have the Constitution, the Use of Official Languages Act, the regulations in terms of that act, the departmental language policy, and then the South African Language Practitioners Council Act number 8 of 2014, and the Pan-South African Language Board Act. So all of these instruments prioritize the need for the promotion of Indigenous African languages. The department, through the National Language Service, which is the chief directorate within the department, has also embarked on capacity building programs to promote the study of Indigenous African languages. The department is running a language bursary project working with different universities, where the purpose is to assist students who are interested in pursuing language studies and becoming the language practitioners of the future. The department also has a new initiative in that it has begun to coordinate a national language stakeholder engagement forum, which brings together language stakeholders from national government departments, entities, provincial legislatures, and municipalities to share information and critical matters around the promotion and use of African languages. This same forum, we've taken it upon ourselves to also promote the UNESCO decade of Indigenous languages from 2022 to 2032. And if I can indicate at this point that we will also therefore be launching a roadmap for the Indigenous decade in November 2022. This will be attended by the members of the forum, but also sort of national government and the various constituencies as a whole. What we have also done in terms of the work of the forum is produce milestones around this roadmap for the Indigenous languages. And as we move through the presentation, I will mention some of those milestones that we hope to achieve in the decade that lies ahead, starting right now. In addition to the forum, the department also works in partnership with the Pan-South African Language Board on the development and promotion of Indigenous African languages, celebrates International Mother Language Day as one of the mechanisms to advocate the significance of using mother languages. The department also has a translation and editing directorate, ensuring that citizens' access to information and services are done in the languages of their choice. It also further facilitates communication between government and citizens through the translation and editing of official documents, and it also provides translation editing in foreign languages. The translation and editing service is also working with stakeholders at the moment to look at the feasibility of establishing national translation guidelines that can be followed by, you know, everyone involved in this work around the country. In addition to that, the department develops specialized terminologies in all official languages. It's assisted by experts and collaborators throughout the country in developing terminology in all Indigenous African languages to empower these languages to be functional in technical domains. Terminologies developed, among others, include the following domains: ICT, financial, parliamentary, political, elections, pharmaceutical. I can also add to that engineering and construction, Indigenous plants, and animals, etc., which the officials in this directorate are currently seized with. But in addition to that, in terms of the development of terminologies, the terminology directorate is also beginning a process of establishing national terminology policy. The importance in terms of this role of terminology is that eventually, partly through the policy, but also through the automated system of having a terminology management system, we are moving in the direction of not just having term lists, but a functional term register. And this register will really become the basis of a term bank, and the term bank will become the basis of an archive, a living archive of Southern African languages. So the attainment of a term register and a term bank is one of the milestones that we're also putting on our roadmap for the decade of Indigenous languages. The same terminology directorate is also doing work with basic education and its entities on the curriculum development being in all South African languages. The next area of work that we are championing is through human language technologies, because through human language technologies, we can breach digital inequalities among South Africans, ensuring that information and government services can be accessed in all African Indigenous languages. So the Human Language Technology Directorate supports multilingualism, enhances access to information, but it also has a number of quite groundbreaking systems and software, which it also trains language practitioners around the country in the use of these systems and applications. So the following are some of the language technologies that have been developed. Spelling checkers for 10 South African official languages, computer-aided translation tool called Outshumato Integrated Translation Environment. The tool can be installed on a computer, cell phones, freely available, used for the translation of texts into official languages and also other languages of the world. There's also machine translation systems for Sepedi, isiZulu, Afrikaans, Sesotho, Setswana, Setsonga, Shivenda, and IsiNdebele. The application can be downloaded free of charge and on the website that you can see in front of you, honorable members. But there are also current projects that we are seized with. One is the development of digital dictionary resources for the new language. The project aims to preserve and promote this language by collecting and recording the speech data from Oma Katrina Esau. Upon completion, the project will produce hard copies and digital dictionaries for mobile access and the development of an app to learn the new language. A milestone here will also enable us to launch the dictionary and the app in October of this year. We are also seized with the development of an online South African Sign Language Dictionary and Digital Sign Language Interpreter System. The department is also working on producing an electronic isiZulu Cultural Dictionary as a contribution towards the intellectualization of isiZulu. Most of these projects are done in partnership with universities or research institutions. I know that this one is done in partnership with the University of Zululand. And then the NAMA spelling and the orthography rules. It's also a project that's currently underway, and this will be published in 2022. To the 2023 financial year that's currently underway. The department also develops and promotes South African Indigenous languages, but also South African Sign Language, Khoisan, and Nama language. Just in relation to the South African Sign Language, I know that work is advanced and it's been championed by parliamentarians around the amending of the constitution to include South African Sign Language as the 12th official language of our country, and that the bill has been released for public comments. So the department is also working very hard to ensure that it is ready for the officialization of South African Sign Language. There have been consultations that have already commenced with stakeholders, including the Pan-South African Language Board. And we're also looking at the human resources within the department so that we are able seamlessly to provide sign language interpretation, but also the development of the sign language and the possible approaches to standardization. So I think in conclusion, we've spoken about the advancement of the languages through the activities of the department, also Pan-South African Language Board and other entities and other government departments. And I've managed to touch on the roadmap, which is key milestones as part of our work on the decade of Indigenous languages. Thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues.
Well, thanks very much, Lisa. Can we then take the promotion of music and other art forms in schools? DDG, it's still you, DDG Kumalo, Dr. Kumalo.
Thank you very much, DG. Can I have the presentation, please, on the screen, Dodrick? Our presentation, while I wait for it to go up on the screen, Chairperson, talks to the programs, thank you very much, that we are implementing it in schools, but particularly focusing on a program that we refer to as the artist in schools. But I also do give the committee an overall view of the other programs outside of the artist in schools. Is it possible to go on slideshow? So the emphasis in terms of background and context, Chairperson, is that the backdrop against which we're implementing this particular program that we are doing in partnership with the Department of Basic Education is the revised white paper on arts, culture and heritage. And it does reiterate the key focus areas around teacher development and assisting the improvement of the quality of content and delivery to the learners, and also around the issue of learning and support material, curriculum development, implementation and enrichment in the creative arts subject, in the space of creative arts, in other words. So the implementation of the program of which we are abbreviating AIS, which stands for Artists in Schools, is an initiative of the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture, and it positions the community arts practitioners across all four genres, which we will mention later, as invaluable resources and catalysts for the transformation of the creative arts teaching experience in the public schools, which is our focus area. Also, the National Development Plan 2030 affirms the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture and Department of Basic Education that it should partner in the promotion and implementation of arts education and training in the public schools. So it's within that particular backdrop, Chair. So as indicated, this is a collaboration between these two departments, and it is also supported by the Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement of the Department of Basic Education that provides direction and guidance mainly in the following creative arts genres, which is music, dance, visual arts and drama. We need to also emphasize that there is a process of the signing of a reviewed MOU between the two departments that also incorporate this particular over and above others. Obviously, in the area of sport, there are other programs that the department is implementing. And also in our area of arts and culture outside of the Artist in Schools program. But that is part of the MOU that is in the process of being signed. Next slide, please. Chairperson, as indicated, we thought we would give the committee a best eye view of the programs that we are implementing, targeting youth in the department. So you will note, Chairperson, that in this particular slide, diagrammatically, we are showing on the left-hand side the programs that are being implemented in school, focusing all obviously on the learners there in the schools. But we are also implementing as a department quite a number of programs targeting out-of-school youth. Amongst others will be the Debut Fund program. And also we have another program that focuses or targets the youth that are in rehabilitation centers, juveniles, which we are doing in collaboration with the Department of Correctional Services. We refer to that program as the Arts Access Program. But also another very important program that targets out-of-school youth, which is the Young Patriots Program, being implemented through NYDA, who are the implementers of this program, on the promotion of national symbols, civic participation, social cohesion, nation building, building national pride, amongst other objectives. However, our presentation will then just focus on what we were requested to brief the committee on, which is what we're doing in schools. Next slide. The Artists in Schools program that we have made reference to, I just want, without reading each and every bullet, to emphasize the last two slides, that this program does not only promote the creative arts, but it is importantly geared towards unearthing, developing new and raw talent amongst the learners. We will show you later on, Chairperson, that it doesn't end with the artist or that creative practitioner going to the school to support the learners, grow these skills, but we also showcase those skills later on, and we will be indicating that. So in addition to all the above mentioned factors that are in this slide, we also want to just emphasize that the Artists in Schools program creates sustainable job opportunities for the unemployed arts practitioners who are placed in the schools to assist creative arts subject teachers in the delivery of the curriculum to the learners in the classrooms. Next slide, please. We are further then also giving indication here of the level at which the support goes, and it addresses the constraints and the challenges that the Department of Basic Education had identified. Amongst others is the issue of capacity constraints that are highly prevalent amongst the majority of the creative arts teachers, who you will find that have also been assigned other subject areas in addition to the work that they actually are qualified in. The subject has become one of the most difficult to teach for the teachers, as they do not have the theoretical and practical skills. And that is what we bring as the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture through this particular program to address and bridge that gap. I've already indicated that it is based on an existing framework of the Department of Basic Education, which is the Curriculum Policy Statement, referred to as CAPS. Next slide. I want to also then just indicate here the process that we follow. The program itself is implemented by very experienced agencies in the area of community development through arts, culture, and heritage interventions. So we've got in each and every province, as we will show later on in another slide, these experienced agencies that actually have are tasked with the responsibility of coordinating the program, working with the artist. The appointment of these agencies initially followed consultation processes and recommendation by the department in the provinces. As a result, all the agencies on the program have been identified and appointed from each province, as I was indicated. This was very deliberate strategy by the department to ensure beneficiation in all the areas or throughout the value chain. There are regular consultations that happen with the provincial departments of education, as they are the custodians of the education systems, which includes issues of policy, leadership, school teachers and learners, and also active participation and endorsement of the program does vary from province to province, as it is experienced even in other areas, other programs. Next slide. What we are emphasizing here and just sharing as information to the committee is that is the fact that the participation by the schools at this point is voluntary. The appointment and placement of arts practitioners follows a very rigorous process that includes, among others, placement of advertisement in the provincial news, social network platforms, interviews, auditions, and submission of portfolios, so that at the end of the day, who we placed in this, we place in these schools is a competent creative practitioner. And we also ensure that the arts practitioners that are placed in the schools are residents within the particular community, so that we do not have unnecessary confrontation with the community where we take someone from another community to actually come and be placed in that school, and we avoid that as much as possible. And also taking into account that those that are employed are within a legally allowed working age. I've made mention also of the issues of all these agencies sign documents, official documents with the department that tie them to the responsibility, objectives and deliverables, as it were. And that the placement of practitioners is generally informed by the annual APP targets, which we would also break down in the next slide. The target for 21-22 was 300, and there's the same target for 2022-23, but you will see in the breakdown, Chair, please let's go to the next slide, that we do exceed this target every year. The implementation of the Arts in Schools program is basically focusing on music, visual arts, drama, and dance. I think I've indicated that. However, in this particular slide, we're just giving a breakdown of each of these areas, what it entails. For instance, music, you will find that it covers African, indigenous, Western, classical, opera, jazz, hip hop. Obviously, we also take into account what is predominant in that particular community, but also the talents that actually are found with the learners that are being supported by the arts practitioners. Area of visual art is a breakdown covering drawing, painting, sculpturing, craft, design, etc. Let me not read each and every, but there is a breakdown there that gives the indication of what each of these genres, what the subgenres under each one is. Next slide, please. I was indicating earlier on, Chairperson, that it doesn't end with the practitioner or the creative going to the school, but it goes beyond that. What we have incorporated in the MOAs that we have signed with the agencies is that this should culminate into a provincial festival or provincial championship. The objective of this festival is to gauge progress and impact by showcasing the learners and practitioners and teachers' collaborative hard work. The championships or the competition component of the program does also encourage the participants to really work hard and impress so that they can be selected to represent their provinces at national level. That is what we are introducing this financial year, Chairperson, the national championship. So the culmination now is not just going to be limited to the provincial championships, but the young people would have an opportunity to showcase their skills even at national level. How we theme our provincial championships is around the national days, be it the Heritage, the Youth Month, the Human Rights Month, the Reconciliation Day, etc. We also provide the learners with a semi-professional space to express their talents. The parents and the communities are actually invited as audiences to support and affirm the learners during the performance. One such that I attended in the Eastern Cape, for instance, in March, which was the last financial year, you could actually see the passion and the interest amongst the parents and the community members that came to attend these provincial championships, but also the pride on the side of the learners in displaying their talent. Let's go to the next slide. This is just an example of one such provincial showcase that took place in Nyanga in the last financial year, where the learners then get the opportunity. On the last, on the left slide, you can see is the area of visual art, and on the right is the area of dance. This is the breakdown person per province in terms of the last financial year. As I was indicating that through collaboration and working with the implementing agencies, working with the Department of Basic Education, and also working with the individual schools, we continuously exceeding this target, which in terms of our APP is 300. But we are indicating the split in this slide, but we are also giving indication of who are these implementing agencies per province that I was making reference to, and the actual persons behind these implementing agencies. Next slide, please. There are challenges, obviously, that we are addressing currently at Chairperson, which is the high demand for the program in the provinces. We are looking at our budget in terms of how we can be able to increase our budget going into the next years. As I said, this particular program addresses a multiplicity of objectives, and hence the high demand is warranted. The issue of policy endorsement, which we are engaging DBE with, the fact that we are barely reaching the majority of the 26,000 schools in the country which exist, they hence us looking at how we can be able to increase the number from our current audit, obviously seeking partnerships also outside our department, as our resources budget wise are limited. Yes, let me maybe stop here, Chairperson. What we are giving indication in this slide is that yes, there are challenges that we are continuously addressing. However, the program is running, it continues to run, and is achieving its goals in terms of what I highlighted around improvement of the curriculum understanding, but also creating jobs for our practitioners. Thank you very much, Chair. I think the next slide is thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG.
Well, thanks very much, Dr. Kumalo. Can I then ask DG Ndima on the issue of the community libraries functionality, as well as the installation of South African flags in schools, and we will not come back to the Chindima. You can follow your colleague's standard of sticking to time. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, our minister, and all members, all honorable members of the Select Committee. I've just shown my face. Let me go straight to the presentation. Maybe just to indicate that the purpose of the presentation is really just to provide the status on functionality of community libraries. We are responsible for coordinating the implementation of the conditional grant whose responsibility is to ensure that there is access to knowledge and updated information, but also the grant purpose is to transform urban and rural community library infrastructure facilities and services through a recapitalized program. Now, maybe I'll start with policy issues. We have got the Library and Information Services Transformation Charter, which was developed in 2014 and approved. And also we are in the process of implementing some recommendations from the charter. And also we have got the South African Public Library and Information Services Bill, which was started in 2012. This was developed and costed. It provides a framework of measures to redress the inequalities in the provision of public library information services, but also it establishes essential norms and standards for the provision of library information services in South Africa. We also conducted the socioeconomic impact assessment of implementing the bill. And I must say, Honorable Chairperson, that this bill, its implementation was delayed due to the high cost associated with the norms and standards framework. Just to give you an example, to implement the bill, the department would have to ensure that 18 billion is available. So the due to financial constraints, the National Treasury cannot provide a funding. But also, according to Schedule 5 of the Constitution, the provision of public library services is a provincial competency. And I must say that provinces are unable to fully fund the operationalization of libraries. So this conditional grant has been earmarked to support Schedule 5 function shift. And provinces may use up to 80% of their earmarked allocations to address the Schedule 5 function shift imperative. Now these are MTEF allocations in terms of the conditional grant. This is serious financial injection. As you can see, the MTEF estimates, I will not get into that detail. And then you can see the equitable share allocations to provinces, which is very minuscule. Had it not been for the conditional grant, it would have been very difficult for provinces to really address matters of library information services in the provinces. This is a total number of libraries in the country, as you can see, that the total is 1,934. And then libraries that are behind the schedule, that is slightly
above. I can't see this thing on the screen, your presentation.
Chair, I thought that it was the control was given by the...
Oh, no, I thought what you were talking to is on a tape or something. No, it's okay, you can continue.
Okay, can I proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah. And then the libraries that are behind the schedule, that is slide 9. We start with Free State libraries. There are 3 libraries there that are behind schedule: Webinar Library, Van Stadens Rest Library, and South Pans Library. You can see the years in which these were started. Date of inception for Webinar was 2013. Original proposed date of completion was 2014. But now the revised date of completion is 2022. And I think it's because of poor contract management. And then the details are there in terms of where things are. Which means now that the new contractor is appointed and then the revised date is 2022. Van Staden Rest Library, also contractor terminated due to poor performance. A new contractor started in October 2021 and then the revised time of completion is September 2022. If you look at South Span Library, started in 2015, was supposed to be completed in 2016, but it achieved a practical completion in 2022, however, not operational due to outstanding SNEC list items. So final completion to be determined once outstanding works is completed. The electrical matter has been sorted, however, the stormwater drainage system is still to be finalized. So the need to fix the stormwater system was realized due to flooding early this year. Then you come to Gauteng, Honorable Chairperson, there are two libraries, which is Acacia Library and Restefal Library. Date of inception was 2017, and it was supposed to be concluded in 2021. Closed recently due to an outstanding ESCOM bill, negotiation between ESCOM province and contractor ongoing. So the date of completion has not yet been determined, but of course the electricity matter has been resolved. And then the other one, Restefal, its date of inception was 2018. August 2021, occupancy certificate attained on 8 December 2020. But also here, we have a problem of the electricity supply cable, which was stolen after the occupation certificate was attained. And this matter is will be resolved by March 2023. The phase two of the project entails the paving and the installation of the guardhouse. And then also in Gauteng, you still have got Mpumelelo Library, which was its date of inception 2018, supposed to be concluded in 2019. Also here, the revised date of completion is 2023, March. Here also, phase two of the project still to be completed. The phase two of the project is the installation of the carport and paving. The library still does not have ICT connections. And the province has already purchased books and furniture for the library. Grizek Library also is the same. The vandalization happened when the occupancy certificate had been issued on the 23rd of April 2029. Now the province is in discussions with provincial treasurer to shift funds for remedial works, which is also as a result of vandalism that happened there. Limpopo Dumela Library, it was started in 2019, supposed to be concluded in 2021, but due to COVID-19 community disruptions and court cases as a result of tribal leadership contestation, this particular library has got a serious problems because the chiefs are contesting where it is supposed to be located. Now, the revised date of completion has not yet been determined given the intricacy of the matter because of contestation. KZN, we have got Dugudugu Library, started in September 2019, supposed to have been concluded 2020. Now, the new date is August 2022. Community unrest in the area also militated against the conclusion of this library. Northwest is Saudi Library, started in April 2017, supposed to have been concluded 2018. Cash flow problems by the contractor, and then the third party contractor to be appointed. So those are the contractual matters, Honorable Chairperson, which have not yet been determined, but the revised date is September 2022. Now, then, if you look at paragraph 40 or slide 14, it then talks about vandalized libraries over 3 years. I'm not going to get into the details there. You can see in the Eastern Cape, it's 20 break-ins and theft. And then there are actions that need to be taken, and I think they are written there. If you look at Free State, there are 5. Also, it's break-ins and theft. Gauteng, about 20. It's break-ins and thefts as well. KwaZulu-Natal, 6, is the same thing. Limpopo is the same thing. It's about 4. And Mpumalanga, it's about 14. There you have burglary, theft, vandalism. Northern Cape, the same. Theft, about 24. Theft, vandalism, as well as burnings of those of the libraries. And Northwest, about 6. Theft and break-ins, and Western Cape is about 5 theft and break-ins, and the actions taken are also outlined there, Chairperson. Now, going to slide number 17, we talk about the highlights of the grant achievements, where we've been able to purchase library material, where we've been able to install information and communication technology infrastructure. We have just been able to build about 238 new libraries. 652 libraries upgraded and maintained, and 948 libraries provide free public internet access. And of course, we employ about 2,500 number of staff. And we have been able to inculcate the culture of reading and writing. Then there are overall challenges, Chairperson, which is infrastructure backlogs, inadequate book collection, poor quality on infrastructure projects, increased dependence on grants to fund staff and new projects, given the fact that I've actually outlined the equitable share of provinces. Lack of norms and standards in the library information services, as well as vandalism of libraries. And then the proposed solution is actually strengthening of provincial capacity on grant management and project management, high level engagement and implementation of service delivery agreements, permanent appointment of staff, community engagement and awareness campaigns. That brings me to an end of the first presentation. Honorable Chairperson and Minister.
Thanks a lot for the presentation. Is that are they?
No, Chairperson, we've got the last presentation.
The last presentation will be on the yeah.
Yes, I'm hopeful that someone is showing
that. Flags in schools, yes, you can go ahead then. Lord,
has it been shown? Because I'm running my presentation from, has it been shown the other side, did you, or should I share myself from this side?
Yeah, I think it's going to upload it now. It's loading. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. No, that's fine. Thank you very much. Let me just go straight to slide number 3, which then talks to the purpose of provision of flag to schools. This particular project is aimed at equipping all schools in the Education Management Information Systems database with South African national flags. And the main purpose of this is to promote national identity and nation building in the country. Mandate and background of provision of flags to school. We are saying here that our department has got the mandate to popularize national symbols to schools and in the country at large. And to this effect, the department initiated this project in 2007. Since then, more than 25,241 flags and flag poles were installed in schools in an attempt to ensure that all schools in the country can fly the flag. And then slide number 5 then talks about the replenishing of flags to schools. Now we're saying here, Honorable Chairperson, that due to exposure to national elements such as rain, wind, and sun, the flag cloth deteriorates. It actually does not last more than 24 months. And thus there is a need to replenish these flags over time, more particularly the cloth. So the lifespan of the flag is even shorter in windy areas. The department currently has an annual target to supply 100 schools with new flags each performance year of the MTSL. And also using the database compiled from the Young Patriot Schools audit reports, we were able to deduce that the main need of the schools is replenishment of the flags that are worn out. Few schools, especially in urban and peri-urban areas, have lost their flag poles due to crime, especially in areas where metal and aluminium recycling is rife. The implementation approach. We are working with our provincial stakeholders to gather more information on the schools that need new flag poles, and we will be servicing the schools based on the size of the scope within a given performance year. We cluster a limited number of schools within a certain geographic spread in the province to contain cost of replenishing the flags or the flag poles. But just to say, whilst I'm still on that item number 7, we are actually working with the Department of Basic Education. In fact, we will be entering into a an MOU with them, because I think we can work even much more smarter by ensuring that the issue of flag becomes systemic within the education system. And we then maybe provide these flags in districts, and then they are able to collect these flags, and then they install them themselves. That's where we will be going forward. So we are, the department is working with provincial counterparts and have been replenishing flags in various schools across the country. In the first quarter of 2022-2023 performance year, were able to deliver 33 flags against the target of 30. The bulk of the schools that were serviced were in the Alfred Nzo district, Eastern Cape, and were serviced by the Young Patriots program in that district. The annual anticipated annual performance in 2022-2023, the department is currently working with various provinces to reach more schools in the outer quarters of the performance year. And of course, due to partnership with the Young Patriots program in various provinces, we will reach more schools than initially planned for the current performance year. So that brings me to an end of this presentation, Honorable Chairperson and Minister. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the presentation. Honorable members, that's the presentation for us to engage. I don't know what's the time now, because I'm using my phone, and that is where the watch is. Members, you may engage with the presentation. So does the minister want to say something before we engage, or will you talk at the end, Honorable Minister? Yes, Minister.
Yes, at the end, Chair.
Okay, thanks a lot. Honorable members, there's the presentation for us to engage. I think it's about 11 minutes past 11. So, yeah. I just wanna, I don't know if my memory is, it's not saving me well. I don't remember this program of Young Patriots. I've heard about it, but I don't remember the details now. Who are these? Are they business people, or are they students, or is that prominent people in the community? And what value? I know that they are adding value in terms of assisting with the flex. And my worry again is that the flex, as you say, in areas where it's windy and rainy, they don't last long. Isn't there some material that could be used that will last longer than 12 months? And then the question of theft of the pools, that is very worrying. I mean, if people steal the pool that holds the flag, it really says something about us and our values as citizens. How do you steal a flag? I mean, how do you steal a pole that holds the flag? It's really, it means you really have a long way to go. And how are we involving communities, actually? Because these are part of the programs related to safety at schools. How are you linking with the Department of Education in ensuring that we secure whatever we have? Honorable members, it's over to you to engage. And the other is on languages. I know that in the Northern Cape, there are people who speak Nama. As I've experienced with some time ago when we went on oversight in the Northern Cape, we met this farmer who who spoke Nama, because she's originally from Namibia. She was born in Namibia, and then her parents are South African. She is a South African. She speaks Nama. And she was also saying that the language, we are losing it. But there are very few people who speak it in this side of the world. And it's even worse with the Hoi and San languages. And issues again related to security of libraries. You know. When we were there in the, I think we went to the Western Cape some 3 years ago, where we visited a library, which was inaccessible for people with disabilities. I don't know if we still have the report of that visit. It was the Committee on Education we visited the library. How do we ensure that the libraries also are accessible for people who are physically challenged, people who are using, wheelchairs and other working aids? How do we make them accessible to everybody? Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'll take hands as they are shown on the screen, on the raise hands facility. I see Honourable Christian.
Thank you very much.
Over to you. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got two questions, Chairperson. The one is concerning the state of the libraries in the Northern Cape, specifically the few that I visited. The one in Barkly West, which is a fairly new library, but they've been battling to keep that library open because it seems as if the infrastructure... from time to time, there's problems with the infrastructure and also the accessibility for the community in Barkly West. It seems that it's not very accessible. They've complained that from time to time, the library is closed and then it's open due to repairs again and so on. So I would just like the department maybe to follow up on that library and see if some solution can't be brought there. And then I just want to know from the department, the community of Platfontein, near Kimberley, the Khoi and San community, what specific programs have they rolled out in that community with regards to language preservation? That's all from me. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Christian. May we have the department to respond? And so members are apprehensive because we have this sitting and we driving from far. The buses are collecting us at 12. So, and some of the questions, I think we'll send them to the department in writing. Over to you, PG.
No, thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Allow me to allow TDG Kumalo and the young patriots, who are they, what is the role they play, just brief outline. TDG Kumalo and then Mr. Ndima on the issue of the flags, there is the tier and where after 12 months. And then, of course, the issue of the NAMA. I think we've got the issue around the rallying point of being Omar Katrina programs and projects that you are involved in. But let me just allow you, because more of the questions are related to your latter presentations. Let's start with you, Didi Chikuma.
Thank you very much, Didi, and thank you very much, Chairperson, for the questions and also the other honorable member, Christian. On the young patriots, Chair, I did touch on the fact that this falls under our out-of-school youth programs. So it's basically young, it's young people from the communities within those particular provinces. And basically what we are doing is giving them an opportunity that has launched quite a number of them and created job opportunities for them, because they spend a year with us. It's a 300 of there's 300 of them in total across different provinces. And the program is run, it's referred to as a National Youth Service Program, and it's implemented by NYDA. And its key focus areas, while it does give these young people an opportunity to improve their CVs, their profiles, in terms of the opportunity they've had with us for that particular year, but also specifically the role that they play is around the issues of social cohesion and nation building, which would include, amongst other things, what Didi Chindima was talking about, the role that they play in as far as imparting knowledge and educating around our national symbols, including the flags. What we have incorporated into this program is what we refer to as adopt a school project that the young patriots would do. So if those young patriots are from Eastern Cape, in the Eastern Cape area, they will then have a school that they're working very closely with, where they will then be able to provide this kind of support, growing patriotism and through these different initiatives. But in the process, they also are gaining skills, as I've said, Chairperson, that really assist them to secure job opportunities once they leave the program. So that's mainly, I hope I have actually clarified. It's a youth support program and job creating problem and initiative of the department. There were questions, Didi, I don't know whether you want Didi Chindima to first come in, that I would request my colleagues from National Language Service.
Proceed and okay. Conclude.
If Lisa Ozanele, you can come in terms of the specifics, because the questions from the chairperson and also from the honorable member were requiring the specific interventions program that we are doing in the area of Khoisan and Nama and the others.
Thank you, DDG, chairperson. I think there were two main questions addressed at us. The first was about the Nama language, and that we are losing Nama, and that languages are also on the verge of becoming extinct. In the presentation, we mentioned that our focus has been on the new language. And the new language is part of the Nama family group. So we are focused specifically on the Nu, but we are also going to move forward on other languages of that group as well. And I think that the work of the Pan-South African Language Board, there's also work done by the board in the same sort of domain of languages. As regards the question about the general language preservation of the Khoi and the Nama languages, part of our focus, I think, as I've also indicated in the presentation, has been around the development of the orthography of these languages. So that's ongoing work, also through the use of human language technologies. But we're also working closely with universities in those areas to help develop the languages. So, for instance, one of the human language technology projects is based as a partnership with the University of Cape Town. So I think that's all I can say at this stage. But if one of my national language colleagues would like to make any additions, Chairperson, then we can also do so. Thank you.
Ms. Ndima, you want to comment?
Thank you, DDG. Thank you, Chairperson. Other projects that we have, the preservation project, there is a dictionary that is being...
You are muted, I guess. Or is this a problem with your line?
I think, Chairperson, we can conclude by attacking Mr. Ndima because clearly there is a problem on the line and there is no time on our side to spare. And Mr. Ndima, on the questions, flag and the electorate.
Thank you, DG. Now we follow each other. There's Ms. Ndima and Mr. Ndima. I hope it's not read as some kind of importance. Maybe just dealing with the matter of flags, Chairperson. The material that we are using, it's a very good material. It's also it's approved by the South African Bureau of Standards. But maybe, Chairperson, we need not also just go to a point of looking at the material that might even be heavy on the pole. And I was just checking with my colleagues, for instance, how much does it cost, the cloth. The cloth is about 250 to 300 rand. Now, if you have got that cloth for, say, for instance, 24 months, even if it means after 12 months. I just think that it's something that could be manageable. Each and every school can actually manage that. And that's why, Chairperson, I was even saying that we are working with the Department of Basic Education to ensure that it's not us who always go to these schools and put the flags. They are there on a day-to-day basis. In fact, what most schools that are able to keep this clause for a very long time are those schools that actually take their flags out maybe in the evenings, and then they unfurl the flag in the morning, and they do that exercise because that's what they need to do. So I'm just thinking that the cloth as it stands, it is a good cloth that can really continue to be used, but I think the maintenance needs to come from schools. That's all that I can say. But with regards to the theft, Chairperson, you are correct. There is theft with everything that is metal. You find theft in railway lines and all those kinds of things. And it requires an integrated approach to the protection of schools, the security around the schools, but also awareness within communities in terms of the importance and the significance and the symbolism that the flag carries as a national symbol. I would like to stop there, Chair.
Chairperson, I think thank you very much, Mr. Ndima. On the question of Vlakfontein community, I think in Barkley West, we will have to just check directly on those communities. But the approach we are making relates to overall development of and preservation of the language for the Ngu, Nama, and Khoi, so that it covers everyone who is a speaker of that language. And therefore then maybe on how they get access to the information that on work we have done is what we might have to look at on that accessibility by the Committee of Vlakfontein, Honorable Chair. Of course, we will follow up on the Barkley West issue. Chairperson, I just wanted to conclude from my side by indicating that the issues raised in this presentation is all revolving around transformation programs that we have, because without language, as the former President Madiba once said, that without language, one cannot talk to people and understand them. One cannot share their hopes and aspirations or grasp their history, appreciate their poetry, or savor their songs. Closing that quote on Madiba is that the language is a gateway to development. And that is why various programs we have made aim at developing these languages, standardization, particularly on the scientific context, Chairperson, because we believe that if they are developed to that level and then they are utilized, and whether it is in science or in math or in astrology, we should be able to then create demand for these languages. And it is important that we therefore then ensure that the people of South Africa who are African language speakers are having their languages developed at the highest level. And that is why the initiatives that we have indicated here are all integrated towards one thing, entrenching transformation and developing these languages to make them accessible, but also scientifically utilized. There was one point that we did not indicate the detail, Chairperson, around the issues of bursaries that we have per year. It's 250 on languages bursaries that we provide for the language practitioners. And the budget is 6 million rand per year. And the universities are six that we utilize. And there's Venda, Forte, as well as Free State, Northwest, Western Cape, and Vets. And these are mainly postgrad to ensure that these languages also we've got practitioners and skills that are required for their development. There was a question about the blind. We work with the library for the blind to make sure that people who are partially sighted are also able to access information. And what we have done now is to introduce that every library modular or mortar and brick that is made, it always have to have this component of the support to the partially visually impaired people so that they are able to access information. On the construction of libraries for people with disability, it is important that where there is a need to do modifications so that there is a place for the REM to come in is done. But we hope that all the time when the specifications are made, that it's a standard practice that this must incorporate access by people with disabilities. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thanks, Didi. Member, is there anyone who wants to raise the last question? Let's give this opportunity to the minister to as one.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks to members of the Select Committee. Chair, the first thing I want to say is that all this which is reported is just part of the work we do as the portfolio. But each and every aspect of what we do is informed by science. We have the research arm of the department. The South African Cultural Observatory is the research arm of the department. So whatever we do is evidence-based. We don't some such. As we speak today, that our work or the work of our research arm, the South African Cultural Observatory, is so prominent that the UN agencies, UNCTAD, UNESCO, quote us because they understand that South Africa's approach is the way to go. In fact, they encourage other countries to follow South Africa's model. Now, I'm saying that so that we come to understand that our mandate of transformation, therefore, is based on science, and everything else is informed by that. I would love to, at some point, that we, together the SILEC committee, dig deep on the question of decoloniality. The Limpopo, for instance, during the early days of our democracy, was leading in this process of transforming the heritage landscape in the country. We cannot check, and this point will make until it sink even to the doomsayers. We cannot continue to have the historically oppressed majority being the cultural minority in the public spaces. We can't. We cannot do that. And we are not going to be apologetic about it. We'll continue to ensure that we normalize the situation. Right now, we have a lot to do in terms of ensuring that the values, which are the founding principles of our constitutional order, of our constitutional democracy, are actually the ones which are centered in everything we do. But all in all, I think that we are happy that we have the opportunity to engage with the select committee. We hope we'll still further engage, because there are a number of things which we still need to do and we still need to share with our select committee. For instance, the issue of cultural diplomacy is quite important. That our cultural goods and services have to be exported. And members of the Select Committee must know that what is the, or where are the main destinations for our cultural goods and services? It's not in Africa. It's mainly US, Mexico, and Canada. Those are the importers of our cultural goods and services. And those cultural services are actually what South Africa is defined is. You and I would know that when you go anywhere in the world, people would ask you, do you know Nelson Mandela? You know, because he has been this international expert for South Africa. But today, you are asked questions like, do you know black coffee? That talks to the creative side of South Africa. So we have a long way to go, and we still need even more time to share with you in the SLEC committee part of the work we are doing. As I say, what has been presented is a fraction of what we are doing, Jefferson. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks, Minister. Thanks a lot. Honourable members.
I'm sorry yes, to interrupt. I'm really sorry to intervene, Chairperson. I just have, and it's based on what the minister asked now. So if I'm allowed, please, Chairperson.
No, you're allowed. You're welcome to the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So, Minister, we spoke a lot about indigenous languages now. And we spoke about the Nama and the Khoi and San languages, which to my mind are extremely important. I'm very, very closely involved, especially with the Khoi and San communities of Platfontein in the Northern Cape, who are really extremely marginalized. And I really see that their language is, it's just, you know, phasing out. I think there's one elderly lady that still speaks Khoi and San there, and a number of the youngsters, you know, as they move out and they move to universities, etc., they are no longer interested, or maybe there's just no time and opportunity for them to get to know their Khoi and San languages. And I'm afraid that eventually we might lose it completely. Now, Minister, the same might eventually happen to Afrikaans. And I'm afraid that we might be back at the same situation in the same conversation in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years time, where we come back and we want to preserve Afrikaans because it has literally died out. So my question to you, Minister, is Afrikaans included in these indigenous languages so that in future we don't have to come back to this platform and try to preserve another indigenous language that might die out because we are marginalizing or forgetting about it? And that is really my question, Minister, because the department's aim is to, you know, preserve these languages that are dying out. And you can actually see it across the world that that is happening. And so specifically Afrikaans, is it included in these indigenous languages and in the policy specifically? Thank you very much, Chairperson and Minister.
Yeah, need for preservation, I mean, and develop, it's not only preservation, it's also development of languages. Like we talk about, you know, books being written in those languages, dictionaries, like they said, interpretations and all that. I remember there was a language that nearly went extinct, that's Gaelic, that's spoken in Scotland, yeah. And some university, St. Francis, decided in order for it to revive this language, they ended up having a faculty that deals with Gaelic. Guess a language. That's how they are trying to revive that language. It's an indigenous language of Scotland, I think, Europe or whatever, you know. But I think is Afrikaans really under threat of, you know, being forgotten as a language? I don't see that happening very soon because there are a lot of South Africans who speak Afrikaans. I speak it too. But Minister, and you may respond to this question. Honorable.
Thank you very much. Chair. I think the Honorable Member touched on a very important part of our work, which is culture, basically. Because through language, you communicate people's culture, and therefore this aspect of culture, which is very key, has to be protected and preserved at all material times. Talking about the Khoi and the San and the Nama language, honorable member listened well, where the Lisa, for instance, the chief director, they was talking about very many initiatives, including dictionaries, which are being digitally prepared even now when we talk about certain languages, like the new language, for instance. The Ma Katrina Esau is said to be the last living person speaking the language. And the process of preservation of the new language has been accelerated from the side of the department. But it's not only about language, it's about a people, Khoi and San people. Their place in the South African context. For instance, if you look at how government, the coat of arms, for instance, the coat of arms is inspired by the foremost indigenous people in this country, which is Khoi and San. If you look at it, you are going to see that. Cabinet last year concluded on the Khoi and San heritage roots, which I think Philip correct me, trace about 13 or 19 nodal points across South Africa of koi and sunfish. It means there is no corner in South Africa where koi and sun people never lived. Contrary to the popular belief and view that they were only confined in Cape or the then Cape or Western Cape and Eastern Cape. When talking to this question of decoloniality, when we named the airport in Gqeberha, Chief David Spearman, people didn't understand what we were doing. And Chief David Spearman is the only Khoi leader who escaped Robben Island three times. We are deliberate about it. We are deliberate about it because we think that we still need to do more for the Khoi and San people to recognize them, recognize their languages, recognize their, many of their languages, it's true, they are near extinct. Hello, Chair.
Now I'm saying thanks to the, they just put the.
Oh, yes.
Slide on, so yeah,
they are near extinct. But you see, in the current conjuncture, where you have 11 official languages, and I can tell you that we are going to have the 12th one with the sign language, the process is on that. Two of the official languages are advanced, and that is Afrikaans and English. They are advanced, yeah, because of what you said earlier on, because of a lot of research which went on over years, a lot of development, a lot of monuments which were built then to ensure that these languages are developed. No, they are developed. I don't see the two languages being extinct. But I can say that we support all the languages and we want them to, but we want these two to lead and in sharing their expertise and their level of development in assisting other languages which are official languages. For instance, earlier on, Chair, we had what was called one of the national the National English Literary Museum, which is located in Makanda, in the Eastern Cape, and we made an intervention there that it is odd to have a National English Museum which concerns itself about English in an area where 80% of people speak isiXhosa and they don't benefit out of that. And then we said, no, let's have, in terms of development, yes, English should continue to be developed, but also add isiXhosa. Two, it's no longer now National English Museum. It's now AMAZWI National Museum of Literature, precisely because we have to be sensitive to the fact that there are languages which still need a lot of development, and together with those which are developed, we are going to be able to move forward. So all the languages, 11 of them, the 12th of the languages, when it comes on board, is going to be protected, is going to be preserved, and ensure that they develop. That includes Afrikaans, but I don't see Afrikaans any time, being extinct. It's supported like all other languages, but we also know that it's a bit developed in terms of its capacity compared to the other nine official languages. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Minister. And I think we are at the end of our meeting because the buses are about to leave. And thank you very much, Minister, for attending to this meeting, and DG, all management. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. For members, we'll deal with the...
Thank you, Chairperson.
With the administrative... We'll deal with administrative issues in the next meeting, not today because there's no time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General Chair.
We are late.
Recording stopped.